Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadharo Sivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Narayanam Namaskritya
Narayanam Namaskritya
Narang Chaiva Narottama
Narang Chaiva Narottama
Devim Sarasvatim Vyasa
Devim Sarasvatim Vyasa
Mukakuroti bachalam pangur langayate giring yatke patamahang bande Shri Gurung dinatharinam yatke patamahang bande Paramanandu madhavam si chaitanya ishwaram Naham
Naham
Mameti
Mameti
Bhavo
Bhavo
Ayam
Ayam
Purushe
Purushe
Vyavadiyate
Vyavadiyate
Yavat
Yavat
Buddhi
Buddhi
Mano
Mano
Akshartha
Akshartha
Guna
Guna
Vyuho
Vyuho
Hi
Hi
Anadinam
Anadinam
Anadiman
Anadiman
Naham mameti bhavoyam
Naham mameti bhavoyam
Purushe vyavadhiyate
Purushe vyavadhiyate
Yavad buddhi manokshartha
Yavad buddhi manokshartha
Guna vyuho hyanadimyan
Guna vyuho hyanadimyan
Naham mameti bhavoyam
Naham mameti bhavoyam
Purushe vyavadhiyate Yavad buddhi manokshartha
Yavad buddhi manokshartha
Guna vyuho hyanadiman
Guna vyuho hyanadiman
Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As long as there exists a subtle material body composed of intelligence, mind, senses, sense objects, and the reactions of the material qualities, the consciousness of false identification, and the relative objective, the gross body, exist as well. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The desires in the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego cannot be fulfilled without a gross body composed of the material elements earth, water, air, fire, and ether. When the gross material body is not manifest, the living entity cannot factually act in the modes of material nature. In this verse, it is clearly explained that the subtle activities of the mind and intelligence continue due to the sufferings and enjoyments of the living entity's subtle body. The consciousness of material identification, such as I and mine, still continues because such consciousness has been extant from time immemorial. However, when one transfers to the spiritual world by virtue of understanding Krishna consciousness, the actions and reactions of both gross and subtle bodies no longer bother the spirit soul. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 29th chapter, 70th verse. So, why are we identifying with the gross body is explained here. It's all seated in a subtle body. Creation of the material world is happening from the subtle to the gross. Everything comes from the most from the subtle elements, and then step by step it creates the gross bodies. Just like before there can be the objects of the senses, there's first the sense. Object of the sense is created because the sense needs to see something. Kind of the opposite the way we think that if somebody was going to create something, then you need a sense, you need something to perceive with the sense. It's the logical way of doing it, but nobody can even think of that logic unless it's so different than the normal way that people think. That the senses have evolved to see the objects that are there, rather than the senses are created and the objects are created so you can perceive. We can't see radio waves and television waves, we can't see so many things. We're allowed to see, the senses are designed to see certain sense objects. Sense objects are created so they can be perceived by certain senses. The cats apparently are able to see the subtle entities, like ghosts. Therefore you see cats facing out looking around at things and you don't see anything. That's why like in the West they say if a black cat crosses your path, it's unlucky. In India they say any cat crosses your path, it's unlucky. Not because of the cat specifically, but because the cat follows ghosts. And if you pass the path of a ghost, it's unlucky. So if he's chasing a ghost or kind of following a ghost and you walk there, well, it's not so good astrologically for the person. That's the background of it. If you ever drive in India with an Indian driver and a cat crosses the road, he breaks. But the point is the cat has got certain senses. We're created to see certain objects. Objects are there. Now, as long as we have got the desires in our subtle body, this is going to keep us bound to the gross body. Because you can't satisfy those desires without a gross body. In other words, if you take the reverse, if you'd have no more desires in the mind for enjoying the material world, you have no more reason for a gross material body. So this we were discussing yesterday, the need of purifying the consciousness. If our consciousness is purified from material desires, then automatically the cause for having a gross body ceases to exist. But how can we become desireless? That seems like an impossibility. Everybody has desires. Living in the material world, one desire comes after another, just because you have because of the body there are some desires, like you have to eat just to survive. By having a body, then automatically there's so many desires that come with it. But that's why in devotional service, we spiritualize our desires. That's called dovetail. By learning how to desire the things the way that Krishna wants us to desire them. By doing that, then they no longer are material desires. They're considered within the realm of spiritual desires. Just like if we want to eat prasadam, if we offer our food and eat prasadam, then that's not a material desire. It's a spiritual, as long as it's within certain parameters. And everything we do, if we can attach it to Krishna, then it becomes transformed into a spiritual part of our devotional service. So it's a spiritual desire. Just like somebody might be an engineer or may have a desire to build. Maybe a creative person. But if they want to build a nice temple here in Brisbane for Krishna, then that creative desire is the dovetail. Somebody's an artist, they want to draw pictures. They can draw pictures of so many different things. But if they're able to use their artistic ability for the service of Krishna, then it becomes spiritualized. So this is an easy way. I mean, trying to stop desiring flat, you know, and have no desire, absolutely, that's very, very difficult. In fact, how can we do that? But to transform our desires into something connected to Krishna, again, it's going with, as they say in the West, going with the flow, it's going with the current, it's much easier to do that. It's not going upstream, trying to go against the whole current, the way things are doing. What it's doing is gradually directing the way we think, transforming the way we think into a spiritual thought train. If we do that, then eventually there's no reason why we need to have a material body, because we can serve Krishna with a spiritual body. You don't need a material body in order to serve Krishna, because you can serve Him in a spiritual form. You only need a gross material body to enjoy sense gratification that's not connected with Krishna. If one is satisfied with the sense gratification that's always connected to Krishna, then that is available in the spiritual world. So we're also discussing yesterday how we need to burn up our karmas and avoid offenses. So don't accumulate any more karmas and get rid of all that we have. So now it's going to another finer step. Desire. We can choose what we want to desire. Because we are identifying with the mind, and the mind is linked in with so many different karmic activities, the mind appears to have a will of its own. It's not really a will, it's just a momentum going on from all our millions of births in this material world. So the mind and the senses, they come up with so many proposals for desiring. But the intelligence can discriminate whether we want to do that or not. Just like they may be advertising some kind of edible. But if somebody knows that that contains harmful things, carcinogenics, or it's not good for one, then one may decide, no, I don't want that. People use that discrimination in the material sense all the time. People have certain diets that they follow. Somebody's trying to lose weight, they may go on a low-fat diet, or they may go on a low-carb diet, or they may go on some other. So they may choose what they want to do based on a certain goal. So if we fix our goal that we want to go back to Krishna, then we can start to also decide what we want to decide, what we want to do. So we can adjust our desires based on our particular goal. We don't have to accept everything that the mind proposes to us. When we decide to live in a particular way, then we get to know what are our limitations, where our weaknesses are. We get to know ourselves very well because we're trying to control our thoughts, control the mind, control the desires. So we can see what are our weaknesses much better than someone never tries to control himself. He never knows where it's like not lifting anything. You're not trying to resist. When you lift weights, then you know how many kilos you can lift. If you never lift anything, how do you know? So they're not resisting whatever the mind's thinking, they're just going after that. And they don't know how much ability they have to control their self. They don't have any sense of sense control. So as we learn to control the mind, we find that the mind is very powerful, and the mind resists like anything because it's been uncontrolled for so long. And that's why we need the purification. Why we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, every day is to spiritually make us strong enough and to also purify the mind so that it becomes cooperative. If we immediately had no more material desires and everything we desired was Krishna, then from this verse there would be absolutely no reason why we need to have a material body. We're here because still we have so many subtle and gross attachments that we need to purify. Of course, while we're in Krishna consciousness, we have a purpose we can serve here, to serve Krishna. So when somebody is completely absorbed in serving Krishna, then it says even though he's in the material world, he's as good as a liberated soul. Iha yasya hai dasi karmana manasa gira nikalasvapya vasta su jiva mukta su uchite. Iha yasya hai dasi karmana manasa gira. By his work, by his thoughts, and by his words. If somebody is always engaged in serving Hari, then even while living in a material world, he's a liberated soul. So our goal is to be liberated servant of Krishna. Engaging our thoughts, our words, and our mind, our well-minded thought, words, and activities in Krishna's service. So here in this verse, we can understand the importance of the desires. We can decide what we want to desire, what we want. Thinking, feeling, and willing, this is the nature of the spirit soul. So we can decide what we will to do. We have the free will. Just like people decide they want to become a nurse or a doctor or a lawyer, to get this degree or that degree, and then whatever is required to achieve it, then they work for that. They have to study, they have to go to classes, they have to do different things, do practical workshops, whatever it is. Whatever is the required, but they've made a decision, this is what I want to do. At some point they may change their decision, decide to change their career to something else. But everything is based on a particular desire. So being a devotee means that we actually desire to serve Krishna. We make that desire that my life is dedicated to serve Krishna. The devotional service takes a big boost when we go before the deities or Krishna and actually surrender. We say, my dear Lord, I am surrendering to you. From this, my goal, my purpose is to serve you. Of course, to build somebody up to that point where they have the faith to surrender to Krishna, maybe first they have to practice it, they have to see how it works. When somebody finally decides that I'll surrender, that's a very big step forward. All of our preaching and to bring people to the level of surrendering, and then once they're surrendered, then to train them how to actually achieve that. So somebody decides, I want to serve Krishna. Then accordingly they need to purify the mind, direct the thoughts. If the thoughts are directed properly, then it's easy to direct the body in Krishna's service. Material identification. If somebody is using everything in Krishna's service, then they can actually realize I'm not the body. Sometimes we are in states where we don't think we're the body. When we're in deep sleep, we don't know what we know. We're not thinking we're the body at that time. We're totally unconscious. Somebody's in a coma, they don't think they're the body. When you're dreaming, then you think you're the dream body, the subtle body, or astral body. When you wake up, then you don't remember your astral body anymore, then you think you're the gross body. Sometimes when you have a very high fever, then you also become free from the body consciousness. That happened to me. I think I had 106 Fahrenheit fever. It was just like, it's almost at the point of death. I don't know, it was the doctors couldn't diagnose it for a long time. It turned out it was a urinary infection, but didn't drink enough water in the hot weather in India. At that time, I became complete. It was just like a buzzing in my head. I completely became unconscious. Just at one point, the body was just like floating. You didn't think about the body at all. It was so, I guess it becomes so unbearable. At one point, you just shut it off. I remember I was listening to Prabhupada's tapes, and the tapes were making me feel very happy. It was a unique experience. So the body is totally in suffering, and you're feeling happy listening to Krishna's message. How the happiness wasn't at all dependent upon the body. So there are sometimes we experience momentarily some freedom from body consciousness. As one is engaging their senses, their mind, their words in Krishna's service, then gradually they can also start to identify beyond the body. They start to do things not because of the bodily purpose. Of course, while we're in the material world, we need to have a certain degree of bodily awareness, otherwise we'll be in big trouble. In terms of like getting run over when you cross over the street or different practical things. But some devotees are so elevated. I've seen some acharyas, they became very mad after Krishna, but they totally lost consciousness of their body. So at that point, Krishna actually took over the bodily functions and guided them, and their consciousness was completely absorbed in Krishna. This is what happened sometimes to Lord Chaitanya. He would be so much absorbed in the ecstasy of Krishna that, of course, he didn't have a material body, but he was playing as if he had a material body. So then, for practical purposes, it looked like he had a material body. Sometimes he was acting like an embodied person, although we know he's Sat Chit Ananda. So then, when he would be in his extreme ecstasy, then he would not show any awareness of his body at all. He'd just, like, when he was walking by the side of the ocean in the autumn, in the Ras Lila time, and there was the shimmering moonlight, full moonlight in the black, dark sea of the, in the night, it reminded him of the Jamuna. I mean, like, how you went to the Kumbh Mela this year? Kumbh Mela, that's in January, February. Anybody went? Like, if you see in the Kumbh, the Ganges is a kind of a saffronish, light brown color. But the Jamuna is a dark color. It's a blackish color. So the two waters mixed together, you can see the two colors mixing. There's one of Jamuna's names is Kalindi. Kali also means a dark. The Kalindi. When you bathe in the Jamuna in Vrindavan, of course now because of the big dams they put, there's not so much water. But still the water is a dark color. You bathe in the Ganges and it's a lighter color. So in the night, the ocean looked dark, naturally, and then the moonlight on it. So then Lord Chaitanya, he was remembering Vrindavan and Krishna dancing by the side of the Jamuna. And he became so absorbed in the thought that he was in this ecstasy, totally unaware of his body. And he was ran to the ocean, as if it was the Jamuna River, and jumped into it. And he was swept away by the waves. And he was just walking, and when walking with the devotees, it just happened so quick that none of the devotees saw him run off. So they looked around, they couldn't find Lord Chaitanya. So where did he go? So they went, some went, said, okay, they made a plan, you go check in the Jagannath Puri temple, you check at Tota Gopinath, you check at this place, that place. They all went in different directions to see the places Lord Chaitanya normally would be. He gets at the Gombira, his room. They all came back empty-handed. No, it wasn't there in any of these places. So they started walking alongside the seashore, looking. There was so much in anxiety. Where's Lord Chaitanya? And then they started walking up the coast. They almost got to Konark, which is the famous sun temple. That's quite a bit, 20 kilometers by road. I don't know how much it is by sea, up the coast. And there they found the one fisherman who was crying and shivering, and he was in great fear. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. So Sri Dhamma said, what happened to you? What's wrong? He said, I've been possessed by a ghost. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Look at this, I'm shivering in my body, tears coming from my eyes. My hair is just standing, and I'm crying, and it's me, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So then, Sri Dhamma said, well, look, I know how to cure ghosts. I know how to exorcise people. So, I'm going to free you from the ghost. You just wait here. He started chanting some mantras. And he grabbed him and pow, pow, pow! He gave him three slaps on the face. Yeah, okay, now you're all right. Ghost is gone. He brought him back to some body consciousness. And so what is this ghost? Well, I was fishing in the night. I got some really big fish in my net. I was pulling and pulling. And they came, I said, what is it, gigantic? I thought it was a big, like a white shark or something. I don't know what it was, so white and big. I tried to get out of my net. I said it was a ghost. It was this long thing, just like in a human form, but all the arms were disjointed and the legs and everything is horrible. Oh, they were frightened. And then, where is this? Where is this ghost? Oh, it's there in my net. I couldn't take it out. It's horrible, horrible. It must be Lord Chaitanya. No, I've seen Lord Chaitanya. He's very beautiful. This is horrible. So then when they went, okay, let's go. They went. But it was really Lord Chaitanya. But when he would go in this extreme ecstasy, his joints would become disjointed and he'd become very long and completely out of body consciousness. It's inconceivable that somebody within him, this world would be so unbody conscious as the Lord Chaitanya would become. And so they found that he was there in a net, and they untangled him, and they put him on the... They couldn't take him anywhere because he was all extended. So right there, they put a cloth down and put him on the cloth, and they washed his body, and then they started to chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So while they were chanting, then Lord Chaitanya started coming back together. All the bones started reconnecting, and gradually he came back to consciousness. And he was like halfway conscious and halfway in his ecstasy. Then he would be telling what. So why are you bringing me back? I'm seeing Krishna, and the gopi, they sent me to get flowers for making a garland for Krishna, and Krishna is there dancing, and he's telling all the different pastimes that he was seeing. And then finally, you know, he's coming out of his trance. He comes back to external consciousness, which appears to be like what normally people are. So why you brought me back? I said, well, Lord Chaitanya, you had jumped into the ocean and you were floating there in the ocean, and this fisherman had picked you up. And so then everything was explained, what happened, and Lord Chaitanya didn't even know what had happened. So Lord Chaitanya would show this extreme ecstasy, which is normally not visible in this world, of somebody who completely, even though they're playing the part of an embodied person, he would go in this total ecstasy of being exported, his consciousness would go in the spiritual world. Sometimes Krishna's servant, he was riding on the elephant, he'd see a peacock feather lying on the ground, he gets so ecstatic thinking about Krishna, he'd only become unconscious of his body, he'd fall off the elephant. It's kind of dangerous if our car drivers get too advanced to remain conscious of the road and the body. Well, they were asking Subdhamada, how did you know the fisherman came in contact with Lord Chaitanya? He said, well, he was saying he was haunted by a ghost, but he was chanting Hare Krishna. So normally if you're haunted by a ghost, you're possessed, you don't chant the name of Krishna. So I could understand that somehow he came in contact with Lord Chaitanya, and therefore he was experiencing ecstasy of love of Krishna. But because he didn't know what it was, he was frightened by it. Suddenly he started crying, hairs coming, all the ecstatic symptoms are coming. And he thought that I was possessed by a ghost, that's why all these things are happening. I didn't know what it was, he was frightened. So I wanted to get the fear out from him. And then he could be a little normal to discuss with us. I mean, Madhavendra Puri, he would go, usually Radharani, Lord Chaitanya, and Madhavendra Puri are the only three that show total Mahabhav, where they go into this extreme ecstasy that's so intense, it's totally out of this world. Of course, they're all transcendental personalities. I don't know how applicable the example is, but... within this world, we can. I mean, this is an example of total identification with Krishna in the most extreme way. But even to lesser degrees, you find devotees. I mean, only they would go into Mahabhava. But other devotees, naturally, when they're doing their service, they also start to identify so much with Krishna that. Identify with the guru's interest, with Krishna's interest. So that becomes more important than one's own physical priorities. This is like that example of Ramanujacharya, that when he was preaching as a sannyasi, he was just staying nearby the place where he used to live. There's four stages of sannyas. There's Kutichak, Bahudak, Pratibrajak, and Paramahamsa. So Kutichak means you stay nearby your house and the family members bring you food. And Bahudak means you stay like in the village where you used to live, and people you know, some relatives, that they somehow they feed you. Because if food is, you know, always a prime concern, where are you going to eat? Right? Can't live without eating. So just to go off and then maybe, you know, you need to build up a little bit your confidence and that you're going to be able to survive without any income. So Pratibrajak, I mean, they would travel and then just depend on meeting somebody that would somehow feed them. Or them encountering some food somewhere or another. So that's the third level. So he was on the Bahudak practice level. So he would go to his cousin and to different known people and take food like that. He hadn't really started the big extended preaching yet. So when he met some Mayavadis, and these Mayavadis, he so thoroughly smashed them. But the problem with Kali Yuga, it used to be that when you would defeat somebody philosophically, they would accept you as their guru. That's how it used to be, that whoever had the better argument, then they would be accepted as guru. But in Kali Yuga, the people are committed to whatever they believe in, whether it makes sense or not. It just becomes like a sectarian thing. So then, these Mayavadis, although they were defeated, they decided that, they didn't accept. They just were defeated, but still, so they instead what they thought was that if this preacher goes on, he's going to convert all, he's going to defeat all the Mayavadis, will be finished. So they were Mayavadi gurus, they're getting money from it, and they had some motive. So they weren't really sincere seekers of the truth. They were just in this particular path. So they made a plot, we have to murder him, we have to assassinate him. So that way, then, we'll be free from this danger. And so somehow they influenced one of the cousins of Ramanuja, where he used to eat. He used to go there, not eat there, but he would get, he was a begging bowl, he'd get some alms. So, I don't know exactly what the, how they did it, but somehow they got poison in his food bowl. So when he came there, the cousin was handing him the bowl of food, and it slipped from his hand and fell on the ground. And immediately a cat ran up and ate from it. As soon as the cat ate from it, it became a stiff, you know, it was lying on the ground, you know, and then Ramanuja looked, he lost his appetite real quick. So after them, then he wouldn't eat. Because who do you trust? His own cousin was to give him poison. So he wasn't eating at all. And then the disciples became very worried. They went to see his Siksha Guru or some kind of guru went to see and to try to find a solution for this. So then the guru took about 3 days to walk there. So when they heard that the guru had arrived on the other side of the Kaveri River, like yesterday in the slideshow I showed the Maharajis were bathing in the Kaveri River. It was like 1 foot of water and they were kind of laying down and the men who went somehow found a spot with 2 feet. But the river is like 400 or 500 meters wide, maybe even some places almost a kilometer. But in the dry season, the river, the water is only like as big as this room, just a little, maybe a little bigger than this. It's a very narrow channel, like a creek. In the rainy season, it fills up. So on the rest of the river, where it doesn't have water, it's sand. So in the hot month of May, that sand gets super hot. I mean, you walked on the beach sometime when the sand is really hot. So, Australians know about the beaches, right? So they went and they met right in the middle of the riverbed, right on the hot sand, and then Ramanujacharya, without his any shirt or anything, he just paid his obeisances to his guru. And all the disciples paid their obeisances to the guru of Ramanuja. Sometime in this kind we're trying to discuss whether we'll have grand disciples, you know, disciples initiating in the presence of their guru. Apparently, this was happening to some degree in previous times. We just don't know exactly the rules, how and when that was happening. But here, they were all paying obeisances. But then after one, the different disciples of Ramanuja, they were also like feeling so much pain from the heat on the sand, burning in the sand. They got up and they couldn't take it any longer. But Ramanuja kept paying his obeisances. Finally, one disciple couldn't take it any longer. It must be burning Ramanuja so much. He lay down by the side of Ramanuja, picked him up, put him up on his chest. Then the guru said, "Get up now." And he said that this disciple can cook for you. Because the pain of the guru was more unbearable to him than his own pain. He couldn't bear it any longer, thinking his guru is burning, that he lie down and take the burn, but let the guru not be burned. Therefore you can trust that he'll never do anything to harm you. If our interest, if our desire so much that Krishna, we don't want anything to harm to come to Krishna or his interest. We don't want to do anything which is harmful to Krishna or his interest. We can't harm Krishna per se, but you can do something against his desire, against his interest. Then our consciousness will be so pure that it becomes sanctified. So that is something that gradually we develop, where we become Initially, we're just trying to do things for Krishna, and gradually we become more and more doing things for Krishna, till finally we're doing everything for Krishna. And then we're gradually becoming more attached to Krishna, then we actually start using our intelligence, how to do everything for Krishna. We work for Krishna's interest. So we identify so much with Krishna that all our desires are purified. And we wouldn't think of doing anything which would be against Krishna's interest. So it's a gradual process of learning to identify with Krishna and to please Him. But it's a very easy way of eradicating all material desires. We still desire, but now instead of desiring something material, it becomes a spiritual desire. Even someone who's for the renounced order, of course, it's a very simple situation, but even that little thing sometimes, little attachments may be there that hold us back. A grihasa, they can also achieve this, but then they have like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prayed that Koro Krishna Sangsar, make your material household life based on Krishna, centered around Krishna. If everything's done to please Krishna in the household, I want to have a house to have a nice temple where I can worship Krishna, invite people over so I can do some Namhat programs. You can dovetail. Instead of someone, I want a big house, a nice TV, I can watch TV all day, and should have a bar, and should have this. You know, people, they have their material plans, where the devotee, I know like devotees in the Middle East, who are working householders, and you can't stay in the Middle East forever. They're expatriates, they call it, you know, where you're working like for some time. So there's no tax in those Middle Eastern countries. So people work there, and they build their house in India, so when they retire, they'll go back to India, or wherever they're from, Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, wherever. So those who have become devotees, now, they said, before I was going to have just a big garage, and now I'm going to have a temple. I'm going to have a preaching facility in my house. And practically that's what they've done. They designed their house such a way they can have a guest room for visiting preachers that keeps them separate from the family, so the family has its privacy, but they have a facility to encourage the visiting a Sankirtan party or something, a room for guests. They designed their house in such a way that it specifically facilitates the preaching. They're having a nice room where you can invite people over, they have kirtan, having an altar. They actually plan ahead like that. So somebody can do something, but even it appears like it's material, but because they're doing it with a spiritual purpose, it becomes spiritualized. So we need to purify our desires and do things in such a way that Krishna is always in the equation. It's all right to build a temple for Krishna and you can still live there. It's all right to offer the food to Krishna and you can take the prasadam. So it's all right to do things for Krishna, but at the same time you also get some facility from it. It's just that it should be, everything is done under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. Somebody, they build a microcosmic, you know, temple for the deities in their kitchen, you know, and they have a huge, you know, other facilities that have nothing to do with Krishna. Things that have to be balanced, how somebody does it, what they're going to use it. They have the plan to do the things for Krishna. We shouldn't do things that we can't substantiate that this is also reasonably offered to Krishna. But like if somebody was making movies for Krishna, that was their profession, then they would have every right to see movies, or somebody was preaching and there was a very topical film. I heard Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj told the disciples they could see Matrix because I even took them once and saw it because it's such a topical preaching thing with the virtual reality and everything that you can apply it in Krishna. If with the proper philosophical guidance, you could apply that. So there may be something that can be applied, but then just to go and see anything may not be. So the devotees have to be discriminative what they do. That's how we have an overall desire to be Krishna conscious, and we don't want to do something that's just going to be an obstruction. It's going to be an agitation. It's going to be if there's something that can really be used for Krishna, then one does that also. Sometimes, in trying to do something for Krishna, you get entangled. And it's so indirect that it gets more and more entangled and you're actually getting off the track. Just like Dhruva, he was defending his kingdom against the Yakshas, but actually he became an aggressor. He was like, unproportionate attack on the Yakshas than what was deserved. So finally the higher authorities in the universe came and reminded Dhruva that he was going overboard. So in this material world, it's very easy to get off the track. It's easy to start off doing something for Krishna, and in the end you're doing it and you just got carried away. And it's no longer really relevant for Krishna anymore. It's gone too far. That's why we need to have association with devotees. The devotees help to keep us on the track. What are you doing that for? They give us the, you know, they bring things into perspective. And that's why we need association with devotees to remind us to do things for the right reason and the right proportion. And this way we burn up our material reason for being here, and we start to develop, as we're doing devotional service, we develop our spiritual body and prepare to go back to Godhead. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any question? Achita.
Well, there is somewhere that I think that you know, so many days that the closest experience, I think it's a bit of a sense, the closest experience of your soul is when you're in the shit. I have four.
Question? Right, that's right. Because at that time you're not at all, when we're totally in spiritual consciousness, then we're not aware of the sufferings or enjoyment of the body. When you're in deep sleep, you're not aware of the suffering and enjoyment of the body. You're totally unaware of it.
And I remember now, because you say this is why the sleep is required for rejuvenating the subtle body and the body because of the closeness to the soul on the island, and therefore it's being rejuvenated by the contact. And therefore, sometimes when you have these snap sleeps, or like 2 minutes, 10 minutes sleep, it's within an hour, and you feel rejuvenated.
If people don't sleep, they go crazy. Need sleep to rejuvenate the subtle body. Also, I heard explained that, like, so much trying to deal with the material world, it's so unnatural that sometimes you just have to take a break from it. It's a natural state of the soul, isn't dealing with all this kind of. The material world is very conflictive. It's by artificial identification. But when we are actually in liberated state, then even though you're awake, then you're not, you're transcendental to the suffering and enjoying of the material world. Not that the liberated state means you're unconscious, you're conscious. But you're not aware, the problems are not bothering anymore. So as we become advanced, we may achieve that 100%, but so the problems reduce in their size, so they become very small. Like a whole ocean becomes the size of a little cup of water, a little puddle of water, you can just step over it. The ocean of problems becomes manageable. So you find that as people face big problems, so many anxieties, you get them to chant, get them to be really Krishna conscious, then they tell you, come back and tell you that actually problem's still there, but now it doesn't look so big as it used to be. I can handle it now. Sometimes the problems we face seem unsurmountable because we're not in touch with the spiritual consciousness enough. When we become more Krishna conscious, then it becomes smaller. When you're totally Krishna conscious, the problems don't exist. For a totally liberated soul, beyond problems, like Vaikuntha. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nakansiti Vasochati. Totally identified with the soul, there's no anxiety and no suffering. Adya Shakti, any question?
Should we try to become more empathetic with ourselves and try to Krishna's our desires, our thought process? You know, sometimes we think, well, that's my disassociated with it, but should we also try to Krishnaize that process of thinking, whatever the desire is?
Yes, well, we may, when you try to Krishnaize it, if it's something that's so totally un-Krishnaizable, then you reject it by detachment. And with something you want to do, you analyze that I can do this for Krishna. It's easier to do things you want to do. Somebody wants to do something, so first see if it's some way you can do that for Krishna. It's alright to think like, because maybe that Krishna is inspiring that desire. So one way we test it is, well, can I do it for Krishna? And if it's, there may be other steps of analyzing what you want to do, but I'm just giving the one step. But then if you find that it's not doable for Krishna, or it's so difficult to do it for Krishna that the energy you put out isn't worth the effort, then you may change again, but do something else. So simultaneously, the two things that come hand in hand. How we know whether to reject something now is when it's not doable for Krishna. Then we become detached from it because it's not to our benefit. Bhakti Bhava Chani, any question? Pardon? The pillar to success, yeah? Well, when there's some failure, then we learn that this is where I'm weak. This is where I need to work on it. This is, we learn things about ourselves in success and also in failure. So when we know what we have to work on, then we start working on it. We're here eternally. Why should we get depressed? Why should we lose hope? Why should we give up? We're eternally existing. We never die. And we're going to be here in the material world until we get back to Krishna. So instead of getting depressed and then giving up, it's better if we would utilize our energy to be Krishna conscious. So okay, this time I feel Krishna. What's most important is our desire. So even if somebody keeps failing, but they keep trying to get to Krishna, Krishna delivers them. Like that story about the prostitute and the Brahmin. Every time the prostitute had a new customer, the Brahmin put a rock in front of her house, she had a big pile. And she's always thinking, I'm so fallen, but I don't know what else to do, what to do. And she'd pray to Krishna, but I'm so fallen, please have mercy. So then, when they both died, they went to the gates of Vaikuntha, and the prostitute was left in because she was always repentant and she was trying to get out of it, but somehow, even though she was trying, she wasn't able to. Because she kept trying, Krishna forgave her. That's an individual case, but because the Brahmin, he was always thinking of her sins, he had to go to hell. He never tried to purify himself. Instead, he was just thinking, I'm holier than everybody, and this lady is a sinner. So he was always counting her sins and thinking about her sins. She's always thinking about Krishna and how fallen I am, and I don't know what to do, and this and that. So what's important is to try. She got into Vaikuntha, she must have been trying. We can't judge people externally. We have to judge ourselves and try to appear ourselves, see the good quality in others. We're not in Krishna consciousness, we don't want to be over judgmental on people, but we're trying to encourage them to, they're going to be judged by Krishna. We don't have to be the judge. To a certain degree, as a preacher, you have to be able to recognize certain symptoms and be able to guide people to go forward. So that's why even a failure can be an impetus for us to not do the same mistake again. I don't know, maybe at one point someone may give up doing the bad things. Or they're so absorbed in trying to please Krishna, then even if they make a mistake, they are praying to Krishna for forgiveness and everything, so they're establishing a closer relationship with Krishna. Eventually, Krishna will give them enough strength that they can overcome the difficulty. But that's why, to get more strength, we need to chant. So thank you all very much. It was a wonderful time to get your association, so many nice devotees here in Brisbane. Does Brisbane have a new name, like new something?
Brajabhan.
And hope to see you again. I don't know, try always to come for the festival of Moolamba. Krishna loves. Maybe possible sometime before, see what happens. This year is a leap year. We get 13 months. So maybe I have more time, or maybe I don't have any time because of practical services. But we'll see, we'll try. Keep in touch with everybody. Hare Krishna.